The U.S. has its China tariffs. China has its cheaper currency. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. A major economic theme as we get deeper into fall is the decline of China's currency, the yuan. The renminbi, if you prefer, is down again this morning, 6.92 to the dollar, but look out for 7 to the dollar, which we haven't seen since the depths of the Great Recession 10 years ago. Let's turn to veteran China watcher Sean Ryan in Shanghai. He's managing director of the China Market Research Group.
China has manipulated its currency, called the renminbi, to drop about 9% in value over the last few months. And the government is doing that to offset the 10% of tariffs that Trump has slapped on about $200 billion worth of imports. And that's why exports are expected to grow about 8.9% in September from China into the United States.
All right. So the 10-second economics lesson is when China's currency gets weaker, it should make Chinese products easier to buy for Americans. Yet, if we go down to the store this Christmas, that may not be what we're going to see here in the U.S.?
American companies have to buy from Chinese manufacturers. It's very difficult for companies like Apple to transfer their production from China to other countries. So what's happening is higher prices coming out of China are causing higher prices in Walmart and in the dollar store.
Sean Ryan is managing director of the China Market Research Group. Thank you.
Thank you.
We should note that Chinese officials deny engineering the currency's decline, nor has the U.S. labeled China a currency manipulator. Numbers, the FTSE in London is unchanged. Dow and S&P futures are also little changed. A global summit on mental health wraps up in London today, a bid to get funding and treatment options for behavioral medicine more on par with other health issues. Globally, mental disorders are estimated to cost governments and society nearly $2.5 trillion every year. Marketplace's Tracy Samuelson has more.
Getting sick with, say, cancer can be really expensive to treat. But most of that expense will be hospital-based, says Judith Bass, a professor at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. With mental health, the costs are often indirect, like not being able to work.
Only 40% of adults who have a mental illness reported receiving any sort of service for their mental illness in the prior 12 months, and that number drops to below 15% in low and middle income countries.
Treatment might be limited due to a shortage of trained mental health workers or the stigma mental illness often carries. Patrick Corrigan is a professor of psychology at the Illinois Institute of Technology.
So the stigma of mental illness is probably as big a problem as the mental illness itself. And despite how educated we are, there's pretty good evidence it's getting worse.
Corrigan says another reason why mental illness can be so costly is because it often affects younger people in their prime working years. I'm Tracy Samuelson for Marketplace.
There's the slow and steady way to build a business, and there's the Silicon Valley way, which is often get big as quick as you can and fix it later. LinkedIn, the social network for grown-ups, grew fast and quickly became a prime vehicle for showing off your talents to potential new employers. Well, LinkedIn's co-founder, Reid Hoffman, now at Greylock Partners, has just co-written a book about how to pull this off. It's called Blitz Scaling. He came by Marketplace's New York Bureau. Reid, welcome.
Great to be here.
You, Reid, think that even with this fast push to scale up a company, that you have to be thinking about social impact?
Yes. I think one of the key things is the great companies are thinking about how are we transforming the world? How are we making the world better? And that's both upside and downside. And one of the things that we have a whole chapter on this in the book is that as you're scaling really fast, as you're running as fast as you can down the road, be thinking about which possible risk you're taking that you need to mitigate.
Possible risks, because there are unintended consequences of this technology. I'm thinking of Mark Zuckerberg, who I think is a friend of yours. He did not envision his social network as a democracy disruption device, but some argue it may have become that at some level. I mean, you'd think it's high time people developing new apps, new tech, new business, pause. You say there's no time to pause, but that they wrap in what am I doing to the world as part of their thinking.
So part of what we're learning, as you've gotten bigger, you should transform the level of investment you're putting into mitigating risks. So for example, they now have hundreds of engineers dedicated to how do we make sure that the content that's being shared is actually, in fact, more accurate, or how do we make sure that nation states are not hacking us, trying to create political dissension within the country. And they're putting investment in that now because they realize that they're part of social infrastructure.
All right. Now, I really enjoyed part of the book in which you give a list of counterintuitive advice. It's things like embrace chaos. But tell me about this. You should launch a product that embarrasses you?
The emphasis is on speed and on getting contact with your customers and learning from it, with the embarrassment as the understanding how fast you need to move and the fact that will make you awkward and uncomfortable.
All right. And is it really saying here that during this initial burst of lightning speed growth, you should ignore your customer?
It does. What you're focused on is the massive numbers of future customers. So as opposed to saying, oh, we're trying to have a delightful experience necessary just for that first person, it's growing towards what the large-scale eventual customers will be. It isn't that you do bad things to your customer, but if you're like slow or a little responsive, people will be grumpy with you, but they won't necessarily be angry with you.
Reid Hoffman is the co-founder of LinkedIn and an investor at Greylock Partners. His podcast is called Masters of Scale, and the book is called Blitz Scaling. Reid, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Now, Mr. Hoffman did point out key exceptions to companies putting out not quite ready for primetime technology are medical products and medical testing, where the stuff really does have to work the first time. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.